Everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Ultra Hope Girls, a Danganronpa podcast. We are diving into part two of chapter three of V3. Lots of prepositions in that opener there. And it's going to be great. We're going to rock and roll. I'm excited. Oh, I should tell you what we're spoiling. We're going to spoil chapter three, V3, as well as the entirety of the Danganronpa series. So just be warned that after our mid-roll, we will be spoiling everything from every game and everything ever. Yep.
Yep. Everything
Without
ever.
Without further ado.
Including Game of Thrones, Harry Potter.
Everything.
Yes, every single thing.
Every game.
Yeah.
Everything in existence. Anyway, without further ado, I'm Maddie.
Maren.
And I'm Caroline.
And we are the Ultra Hope Women.
Welcome to the Danganronpa Podcast.
You're on the threshold of an amazing episode. Showtime.
Yes, we are. We are the Ultra Hope Women.
The Ultra Hope Women. Hi, everyone. We're back.
Hi.
And we're back with some trial notes. And then after the break, some spoiler notes.
Yes.
Spoiler notes.
My first note, the very first thing I noticed in this trial actually was Angie's panel with her face on it. Like after they die, they get the panels. Hers is different from everyone else's. She has a little halo and little wings, but because they're red, they look kind of like she's a devil. Whereas everyone else who's died thus far just has an X, which is interesting. So Angie, I guess, is special.
But each of the X's sort of correspond to like each person's personality. So like Ryoma's is like a hard block. Tenko's matches her hair ribbon.
Oh,
with the way it's designed. So
you're right.
But yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's cool though. So I said this in part one a little bit, but this is the first trial where we really see Kokichi's and in full Kokichi effect. You know, like he is really like when he goes, "I'm the culprit, you got me." I was like, you little guy. You know, me and my friend were talking, because I'm currently watching Yellow Jackets, which I highly, highly recommend. It is very gory, though, and definitely horror. So, like, proceed with caution. But we were talking about, oh, God, how does this relate? Oh, we were talking about how, like, there are some characters that we, like, love because they cause so many issues. But, like, we wouldn't want to know them in real life. You know, I would not want Kokichi in my life, but I love his character in the story because he's just chaos. It is so crazy. Anyway.
Agreed. Yeah.
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 Definitely.
Kokichi calls the people who are like not suspects, suspect rangers. And I feel like we could call ourselves suspect rangers.
Suspect Rangers.
Indeed. Indeed.
I'm the captain around these parts.
This town ain't big enough for the both of us.
So true. We also have a very, I won't even go into details. I won't even race it with details, but we have a very, very interesting exchange between Mew and Kokichi.
Yeah.
This is
interesting.
It is
doesn't
so
quite
it's
it
just that. Oh, I hate it. I do. I'm it's too much.
It was actually viscerally terrible.
Uncomfortable to watch.
I don't like their dynamic.
No.
It's just not my favorite thing to watch. I do enjoy Kokichi and I do enjoy Mew, but not together. That's
no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I agree with that. Also, Kibo's photograph function. It's true purpose.
Yeah. Also, I like how he has a mouth
Hate
printer.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
He goes, "Broom." I love it.
I love Kibo's new function. I literally, when Mew said that that's why she had him get that function was to take pictures of her poop, I decided that Mew is the ultimate nurse because her focus on bowel health is much stronger than anything Mekon did. And,
Amen.
Yeah.
She's the ultimate gastroenterologist.
I also love when they're just talking about her poop, and then Himiko just goes, "Quit talking about your poop."
No one cares.
It's like so funny because it's like, you know, yeah, it's iconic.
Love Kimiko it. Actually was like, I mean, there's definitely the time in the trial where she's like, she goes quiet and she's like, I give up, or whatever. She's just like really sad. But there are times in this trial where she is like really on it, and she's like really like, she's like,
yeah,
you know, stop talking about that, or like how dare you say Tenko's death is meaningless, like she's telling off Kokichi, like, you know, she, I was like, I was kind of like, okay, like she's got a little bit of fire in her, she's not just like a small quiet being, like she is able to tell people off when she needs to.
No, it's really true. But that, man, this trial is so interesting with her in particular, because I think it's like a person discovering how to express their sadness and emotions about something for like the first time almost. And just like I know, like the first death that I experienced that was very impactful for me, like I honestly think of it as like before that and after, like there's my life before that death happened and then after, just because, you know, the first very impactful death is always the one that hits the hardest because you've never experienced that level of sadness before. And I think like we're watching her go through that currently with this. And like when she just gives up, like, I don't even blame, I can't even be mad at her because like, she is just devastated and heartbroken. She's being accused for the murder of like two of her friends, and Tenko, she had a complicated relationship with, which she's currently trying to unpack, which I think is like, again, one of the better parts of the writing in this chapter is like Himeko and her relationship to the two victims. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
I try and like think about like, if I put myself in her shoes and theoretically, like, let's say you guys were Angie and Tenko and I lost you, and then people blamed me for your death, like I can't express what that would like feel like.
Yeah.
And that's so powerful. Like I don't think people give Himeko enough credit, because like that's
unimaginable,
unspeakable. Yeah. It's like, it's too awful. And but I don't like it.
It's
really just awful. I feel like there are times when like we're just like, ah, Danganronpa, seesaw, blah blah blah, and we forget like the horror that these characters are going through, like how awful this stuff is, and like how sad, and it's like just terrible. Like, oh my gosh, like
that's so true. And at the end of the trial, when Kokichi is like, wow, this would make great television, like I bet if people were watching this, they would love it. It's like, I'll be honest, it felt a little bit pointed. Like it felt like we're sitting here, you know, like enjoying this game, and it's like, this is sick. Like, it's just like,
I know.
Ugh. Yeah. It really is like the Hunger Games, where it's like, hey, look, you're, you know, getting entertainment out of people suffering. I think Monokuma also says something along those lines toward the end of the trial, where he says something like, he's talking about how all deaths are unfair, but like everyone loves to watch unfair deaths, or everyone loves like the content. And it's like, we kind of do, you know, we kind of are hooked into that stuff. Like we, you know, the bad news in the world gets way more views than good news, and tragedy gets way more attention than other things. It's just, you know, we just can't take our eyes off of it.
You know, I was yesterday I was with like a few folks who I don't know very well, and an acquaintance of mine saw my Danganronpa like game, and she was like, oh my god, like, you know Danganronpa? And I was like I was like I actually have a podcast about it. And she was like, a podcast? Like, she was like, whoa, like I didn't even realize there was like that much that like could make a whole podcast. And I was like, no, like, and then I said, like, think about it, because she had played the first two games. I was like, think about it, like, how much how many themes are explored and all this stuff. And she was like, yeah, like, no, you're so right. And and then she literally said, because she's an anime person, she was like, I feel like a lot of times that's so overlooked in that fandom, like the actual, like, you know, gravity of the, you know, like, and that's not a bad thing. I think it's like, I'm cool with the memes. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not out here being like, oh guys, we need to take it more seriously. No, but like, but yeah, but she even said like, that makes a lot of sense that like there, you know, it would be cool. Like that you are, it's cool. You all are doing that to sort of explore those themes. Cause it almost feels like, you know, oftentimes it's the seesaw memes and the, you know, and the meat on the bone memes, which are excellent and should stay, but, you know, yeah.
Right.
You could definitely make an argument that Doki Doki Literature Club is very similar to Danganronpa, minus a lot of those themes. I'm not saying there aren't themes in Doki Doki. Of course there are. There are in pretty much anything you pick up, right? But Doki Doki does a lot less with interpersonal themes. I'm hesitating because I haven't played Doki Doki in a while, but I feel pretty confident about that. But they're both games about school that are horror games.
Yeah.
And they're taken very differently. So I don't know. Yeah.
But at the same time, Caroline, echoing your thoughts about this whole chapter being just the biggest things that I can't get over in this chapter are just the sheer absurdity of everything that's happening. Like the seesaw, of course, but also like the spinning katana to lock the door. Like, I'm sorry, what? Like, what on earth?
Yeah.
Like, that is just, I cannot take that seriously. I cannot.
I know. And it's funny because I remember like when we talked about chapter 3 in game 1, even being like, wow, this is a little absurd, like blah, blah, blah. But it's way more feasible and way more well put together and cohesive than this is. And it is just like, ugh, oh my God, it would have been, I don't know. I almost think there is a scenario where if they hadn't made it a double murder and it was just Angie who stumbled in on Correggio, like doing the original plan, and then he never went through with the second, you know, the like second murder, but maybe they found notes of like the plan or like, you know, things that imply that there was like a plan in place. I don't know. It would have just been better. Like, I don't know.
Or
like,
even if the seance failed, like if the positioning wasn't right and like their seesaw didn't move or whatever, and everyone just heard this weird thunk and was like, what was that? Oh, I guess the seance didn't work. Angie never spoke. And like Tenko was still alive. Like, even that could have been interesting.
Yeah, but it's just because it's Danganronpa chapter 3. They were like, we gotta have two bodies. So here we go. Yeah.
Or it could have been, oh my gosh, it could have been like Correggio did the seance just to delay people from investigating. Like he pulled people in to distract, to try and get like, maybe the killer was another woman. And so he had two women die, but you know, he was hoping to like take people away from that. Like,
I also, I mean, this may be, I don't know, we're just on the trial in general. The other thing I want to bring up is, you know, in Danganronpa chapter 2 in game 1, we have sort of I don't want to even like give too much comparison between these two things because it's like two totally different like scenarios. But we have sort of this conversation about gender and conversation about like, Chihiro and masculinity. And we've talked about that before, so I won't go too far into that. But you know, it wasn't handled great, you know, in 2010 when it was made, you know, there were a lot of issues. 7 years later, it's not handled very well in this game either. There is still like people making insulting comments about Correggio being like, you know, it really bothers me because it's like you've had 7 years in between that to hear feedback about that. And that one isn't even like, in my opinion, like that terrible of like that, but there were still issues with it. And it really is disappointing that one, we're playing into like the stereotype that people who are like, quote unquote, like cross dressers or whatever are also serial killers. Cause that's a trope constantly in media. Lindsay Ellis has a really good video about it, which I'll link below. And it's perpetuating these negative like stereotypes and everything. And it's like, and also, if you think about it, Correggio was sort of in, if you do his free time events, you learn that like his relationship with his sister was like, she was quite controlling over him. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, then also saying that like victims of that sort of abuse then become serial killers. Like, that's not okay.
There's a lot of issues with Kyo's backstory.
Like, we're joking, okay, the writing is terrible, blah, 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 blah. But this is where it's, like, almost harmful, right? We're okay, seesaw, silly. weird sexual innuendo, silly town. This is like harmful. You know what I mean? And like, this is like, it's not okay. So yeah, I just wanted to like mention that because, you know, and then the whole incest thing, which we always, every time we talk about Correggio, we're like, we're not even going to touch on that because it's not, it's not canon. Like, we hate it.
Yeah.
It's,
we just pretend. Yeah. Yeah. Which it's just like, yeah, I feel like they were just throwing everything at us to use every like either stereotype or bias or whatever to make us see Kyo and be like, ew, gross, you know what I mean? And it's like,
right,
there was a lot of that was just so unnecessary. Like, honestly, I think the concept of someone like believing in like having a loved one in the afterlife and believing so strongly that they need to give them friends that they're committing murder, I think that's an interesting concept. But did they really have to throw in the incest? Did they really have to throw in the like that he wears lipstick and believes his sister is like
right
living inside of him? Right. Did they really have to, like, you know, there was so yeah. much of that was like, did that have to be a part of that? You know,
right? What I mean? Like killing to then give your sister friends in the afterlife. Okay, can handle that concept. That it could, again, like you said, could have stopped there. Could have stopped there. It literally
they did not have to
that.
Be lovers, or they could have been lovers but not sisters, like, or sisters, not siblings, like.
Right.
You know,
and that too.
I will also just throw out there that Correggio, being the ultimate anthropologist, I'm sure, is very aware that like there are cultures around the world, current and past, where incest is no one even blinks at it. Like, it's the norm. Right. But I do very much feel like the Danganronpa creators put that in to make us grossed out by Kyo on purpose.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it. And it's like, why? Like, yeah.
What you guys are talking about like limiting like how many factors they threw in for this entire scenario, it reminds me a lot of in The Walking Dead. I didn't finish that show, but I did watch I watched up until one of the main characters died, which if you watched The Walking Dead, you know exactly which character I'm talking about, and you know exactly when I stopped, because it's about where everyone stopped. But there was this side story where this young girl, she believed that the zombies weren't evil. She was like, it's still the people inside. Like, you know, we just have to believe, basically. And she kills her sister to prove it, and she's wrong and it's bad, but like that, I remember just the like dark, unsettling feeling in my stomach, like it just dropped my stomach seeing that. And that is the powerful thing that could have happened, but because they started throwing in all this stuff that, you know, like Caroline, you and Maddie are talking about, it just like, it took what could have been a really like dark and disturbing plot and just like muddled it,
right?
Completely muddled it.
Took all of any potential meaning, any potential anything out, because it just was, ugh, yeah. This chapter is absolute garbage, yeah, absolute garbage, yeah. Least favorite in the whole series, easy. Like, not even a debate.
This is a good time, I think, to talk about the title of the chapter completely, which is Transfer Student from Beyond the Grave. The transfer student part I feel like was an addition potentially, but there's a movie from 1974 called From Beyond the Grave, which is an anthology of four short horror stories revolving around a mysterious antique shop owner and his antique pieces, which already kind of gives me Correggio vibes. But there's one story in particular that I thought was really interesting, and it touches on the controlling part of the sister relationship that Caroline mentioned. But in one of the stories, there is a shop that had a somewhat like supernatural vibe to it, with a golden rule that when customers tried to cheat the owner, he would give them objects that like basically ruin their lives. And one of the objects, this character buys a mirror, and in response to him trying to cheat the owner, the spirits of the dead that lived in that mirror turn him into a murderer to quench their taste for blood. So they basically start controlling him through the mirror. And it was just interesting. I don't know that that's why they picked this title, but it felt very much like the relationship from Correggio being controlled by spirits to like quench this, I mean, maybe not murderous intent, debatably. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Just kind of gave me those vibes.
Yeah. Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hello. Sorry. Wrong podcast.
Do you think?
Sorry, no. That was so mean.
I
was joking. Obviously.
I've never had a thought in my life.
That's it for us.
All right, that's it. That's it on the Alter Hope Girls.
I will say it was very interesting what Correggio brought up about like toward the end after he was like voted for, saying that like accepting death isn't actual. I can't remember his exact words. I didn't write down the quote, but he talks about how essentially accepting death is not actually possible. Like it's not possible for a human being to fully accept or comprehend that someone has died. And so that has given rise to so many cultural traditions like funeral rites and beliefs from the afterlife and whatnot, and like things that we've come up with as human beings to try and cope with the idea of death. And that is very much the same idea as terror management theory, which is what I studied in college and did my thesis on, which is essentially a terror management theory essentially like says that we as human beings are terrified of death and we try to do cognitive things to cope with that fear in key, like in very particular ways, like using certain belief systems to make us feel like we're part of something bigger than ourselves, or you know, seeking out a sense of social belonging that feels protective to us, like that those there are like key strategies that we do cognitively to try and like buffer ourselves against like anxieties around death. And I think I did a Patreon, but it's been so long. This is so bad that I can't remember, but I did a Patreon episode about that, I'm pretty sure. So if anyone's interested, check it out. Yes, I did do a Patreon episode. I'm sorry, no brain cells today, very little sleep, no brain cells. But yeah, that lines up with a lot of that, you know, theory. And it's very interesting because it's very true, because there's a lot about death that is scary to us. And we do a lot of things as people to try and make ourselves feel better about it, even things that are like illogical.
That's like not to say that doing some of those coping things are like all bad.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Verify
that.
Yeah.
Like seeking social belonging. How dare you? No, I'm kidding. They're not all bad.
You
and like,
want 100 friends? Absolutely not.
That
no.
Murdering people might be a more questionable way to cope with those things, but no, like I mean funeral rites and like traditions and whatever like give people like a lot of comfort and like a very strong sense of like connection to others and a sense of being like rooted in like your ancestry or whatever, like it can, they're really like good things, but there are also like bad things that sometimes people do to try and buffer themselves against that anxiety, like ironically like younger people, teenagers, especially young men, are like way more likely to do risk-taking behaviors, like you know, go like mountain biking and do like really things that put them in danger, but it's not because they fear death less. In fact, there's some evidence to indicate that they fear death more, but doing those risky things is like, it's like contradictory, it's like counterintuitive, but it almost like makes, I think the theory is like it gives them like more of a sense of control. They're like flirting with death. They're not avoiding death. They're like flirting with it, you know? So some strategies can be like actually dangerous and risky, but
yeah,
it's interesting stuff.
I pretty much have one more note. It's very random and it's not really chronological, but it's not really a spoiler either. So I can do that whenever.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just have one more prior to spoilers. It's just an idea for a twist, potentially. Like, I don't know if they'll do another Danganronpa game, but we were talking about like potentials and whatnot, and this is more of like a thematic potential for a future game. But I think it would be a really interesting twist where if the incorrect person gets voted out, just the Blackened gets to leave. I think it would be interesting if the Blackened and the person that was incorrectly voted got to leave. Ooh. Because I think you would start having roles. Like there's the game Town of Salem, the jester role.
Yes, where the jester. You're just
trying to get voted out. And like, I think people would start to play that. Like, let's say, I mean, you would still have to be pretty messed up, right? Like to do this to a group of people. But if you're starting to get blamed for something, maybe you start to take that blame. Like you go in with the focus of trying to, you know, do the right thing. But if you're starting to get targeted, oh, you have a slip up. Like, I mean, it would be very hard to write a script that could follow that. But like, oh, I just think it would be so like, more themes.
Or if there was like an actual like the jester role in the game of like someone, let's say there is like a traitor in the group, but they are the one with the free pass, so they are not actually going to get executed. So like, if they get voted for, then they get to leave, but without killing anyone. Like, that'd be so interesting if there was someone like that who maybe was trying to take the credit for a murder or trying to set something up, or maybe like became an accomplice. That would be so interesting. Yeah. I was really surprised that Maki went along with Shuichi's lie in this trial about Tenko dying instantly versus not dying. I was surprised. Like, I think going back to what you said earlier, Caroline, like Shuichi and Maki really have this like friendship and this trust developing that I was like, oh wow, like she went along with it. Like she actually really trusts him. And that was surprising to me because she's been so like aloof this whole time. Like she's not Kaede. Like she's not a Kaede where she's like, yes, Shuichi, I believe in you so much. Like, you know, like that was interesting to me. I totally expected her to be like, what the heck, no.
The only question I had about that is like, isn't the Monokuma file available to everyone? So if he's going to lie, why is he lying about something that has access? You know what I mean? Like the rest of the lies have been.
Yeah. I don't think it was in the Monokuma file about whether or not she died instantly.
Sometimes it is, but I don't think it was in this chapter.
Yeah. Okay.
Those files are very selective. Interesting in what they include. Yeah.
So true.
Yeah. But anyway. I felt like that was a pivotal moment for Shuichi and Maki's relationship. Like it seems like they're a team now. Like they trust each other. And that is important because this is a game, this killing game, where you are set up to not be able to trust anyone. So hence that, I feel like that was a very, very important, significant moment.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, indeed.
Another note. I will say lipstick was not what I was expecting to see when Correggio pulled down his mask.
I thought he was going to be bald.
Bald under the mask. I don't really know what I was fully expecting. I think I like expected some kind of like disfigurement or scars or like some reason he'd want to keep it covered, but definitely not lipstick. But I will also say, did you guys do like all of his free time events?
No.
Oh, okay.
On this replay, I haven't been doing. I just sleep.
Gotcha. But like there was one of Kyo's free time events where Shuichi and Kyo are like eating a meal together, and Kyo is just eating through his mask, like not even like he opens the zipper, like it's closed, and he's just like holding the food up to his mask, and then it disappears, and he's chewing. And Shuichi's like, "How are you doing that?" And Kyo's just like, "I'm just eating." Like makes no sense.
That's so funny. But that's just like humor. Like that's just like, oh my god, that's so funny. What the hell?
That's just silliness. But and then
I think I would have been more surprised than the lipstick if he had had a beard.
Oh my god, can you imagine? I would not have been able to handle it if he had a beard.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like the beard type. That's more shocking.
I will just say, I don't I can't remember if I brought this up before or not, but in terms of like the gameplay mechanics, I kind of like how in this game you can click and vote for anyone you want, and it doesn't change the outcome of the trial. Because once you've gotten to the end, you establish the evidence, like we all know what's going on. Everyone votes, almost everyone votes for the correct Blackened, but you can vote for someone else, and then the tallies come up and you see like the one. Like, I think that that's like interesting.
That is an interesting because it's, like, detail.
More realistic, but it's also like kind of futility in a way of like can't really change the outcome. But I do think it would be neat.
The person that you voted for, do they like react at all?
No, they don't. And so that's another thing I was gonna say is I think it would be neat if they threw in something there, like even just like a little bit of dialogue, like because you don't know who voted for who when the tallies come up.
Right.
But if someone who gets the one tally is like, what the heck? Who voted for me? And then we move on or like, something like that. What the heck? I feel like that was a missed opportunity, but I do think that is a neat little mechanic. I also think very interesting to think about what may have gone down if Himiko had been the victim instead of Tenko, because it really, to Kyo, interestingly enough, did not matter. Like, it was either one of them could have been the one, so it wasn't really like a targeted murder. It was like one of the least targeted murders we've had so far, given that either one of them would have worked. And Himiko offered first, but Tenko then was just like, no, I'll do it. And
I just had a realization that Kurikyo is probably like the most sexist killer that we have in the games, and he kills Tenko, and that's really messed up.
Oh my god.
No! Oh no.
You're right. Oh, it
hurts me a lot.
You're right. Hurts just a little bit.
Hurts a little. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Hmm.
Just a thought that just happened across my head.
I have one more non-spoiler note. Are you guys all out?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Kokichi toward the end says something along the lines of like, there would be no free will in the world if everything was just the truth and no lies. And I'm curious as to what you guys think about that.
I think it's true. I think that he's right. I mean, I think free will is choice. So inherently, like, then there is no free will without the presence of lies.
I think if the world had started with no lies, then you could make an argument for there being free will, because, like, I can walk into, I don't know, Caroline's room and take something and be like, I took this and left. That's free will. I made the choice to do that. But like, if you have the ability to lie and then that gets taken away,
then it limits your choice.
Technically, you've lost a freedom. Yeah. Yeah.
I see. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't steal anything from you, Caroline. I promise.
You mean it? Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
Because
that
like
was a lie.
If everyone was forced to tell the truth all the time, it would definitely be less freedom. But I don't know if I would go so far as to say there would be zero free will, because like you can still make some choices. Like it makes me think of, like, you know, that you guys remember Divergent, right?
Oh god, how did I forget?
There's the one faction where everyone has to wear black and white all the time and no one lies ever.
Yeah, Kandor.
It's like, yes, yes. I'm like, do you think they don't have free will?
I thought they wore blue. Am I crazy?
No, that's Erudite.
Yeah, the smarty pants is.
Oh, you're
blue,
right.
The nerds.
Oh, wow.
And then there's the people who live on the farm and eat like bread with drugs in it, so they're happy all the time.
Abnegation.
Can we talk about the quizzes?
No. That one's the
quizzes.
Like...
It'd be like, what color do you want to wear? And it's literally just the colors they wear. And then it'd be like, do you think you, like, it's Friday night. Are you A, jumping off of a train? B, picking some vegetables from your garden? C, doing nothing? You live to serve.
Amity. Those are the farmers.
Amity. Abnegation is where
they
like
serve.
Wash
they live
feet.
To serve.
Yeah, that's Kirumi faction.
Aaron, you are so funny. That was great.
That's like, it's like the Harry Potter quizzes where it's like, oh my god, I just saw a TikTok recently.
I did too, like, recently.
You order a coffee from Starbucks and like the barista says,
bravely tip the thing and kindly and bravely hold the door open for the person after you. B, throw the coffee in the face of the person who made it for you. C, take the coffee normally and leave. Or D, books.
Yes, exactly.
It is oh my God. Excellent.
We should do a bonus episode where we sort people into divergent factions.
Oh my gosh.
I was just thinking, you know, Kirumi is very much an abnegation girl.
Absolutely. She's an abnegation bitch. Sorry. Okay.
I know that just came out of Caroline. We are on a spiral right now.
I know.
She's an abnegation bitch.
Anyway. Also, Kaito has tuberculosis now? Question mark.
I literally love. It's like every you know how those memes that in like historical movies when someone gets sick and they're like no, I'm fine, I feel fine, and it's like doctor, we're losing her, she's slipping away. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, it's that
she has consumption.
I feel like handkerchiefs in old movies, it's like Chekhov's gun, you know. Yes. They'll come back bloody at some point.
And then it's, I know, it's so true.
Of course. Anyway, that is all my non-spoiler notes. Clearly there's something going on with Kaito as well. Part of me was wondering, replaying this chapter, was wondering like if he actually was, I think he is, but if he actually was afraid of ghosts.
Yeah,
or
I think
he
is.
Was like using that as an excuse because he doesn't want anyone to know he's sick, so he'd rather them think he's scared of ghosts, but probably not.
No, I think he's scared. I think it's both things at the same time.
It's probably both. Yeah. he reminds me of my dog, like Kaito. He has the same personality as Zeke.
It's actually, that is so accurate. And then like, A plus B, A equals B, B equals C. Marin is also Zeke.
That's the truth.
Like, okay, wait, actually, tangent, but I need to tell you guys about this because yesterday, my sister and I, my sister, I can't remember if I told you guys this, but my sister just had surgery. She had,
my God, Maddie, jeez.
Laparoscopic hip surgery where they had to repair her labrum because she tore her labrum. Ooh. And she had like premature osteoarthritis of her femur, and so they had to like shave down her femur and like pin back her labrum. And so she is like on crutches. Like,
how is this the first time I'm hearing about this, Maddie?
I know, I'm so sorry. Like, I think I forgot to tell you guys this completely, but she is like now doing physical therapy and stuff like that. And so yesterday when I was at home, I was helping her with some of her PT, and like I was like doing like resistance band things. She was doing like a lot of arm things, so just to like kind of like get some activity going because she can't do much with her lower body. But at one point, like one thing that the PT recommends for getting like a little bit of exercise without using your lower body is like just to take like a little bouncy ball and like throw it back and forth with someone. And so I got like, she pulled out like, she has this purple bouncy ball, and I'll send a picture of it to you guys. It's not intimidating, but literally Zeke was like chilling, laying on our feet, like vibing with us while we were like pulling this stuff. And then the second she pulled this ball out and tossed to me, Zeke gets up, he runs into the corner, and he like looks like he's like cowering, like looking at this ball, and we're like throwing it back and forth, and he's like and then he literally like walked over into the other room and hid behind the dining room table, like he was so scared of this purple bouncy ball. And we were like, Zeke, what is wrong? Like, I need to send you these pictures, hang on.
Maddie, okay, I was very confused as to why you said we had a purple bouncy ball. It wasn't intimidating at all, as if Caroline and I were like,
I know, I was wondering why you okay, specified that, but
so there's a picture of the ball.
Oh yeah, just a little ball, you know.
And then there's a picture of Zeke who had
oh my god
look at him.
He is horrified.
Like, he's so scared.
So sad. Please tell me you stopped. This is animal cruelty.
I know. He literally is like, looks like he's being abused.
And then he went over and hid under the dining room table. And we're like, Zeke, what? Who hurt you?
Aren't anyway, animals supposed to like balls? Like, I know, or I mean, literally, at least dogs.
Literally. I have no idea what it was. But like, he is so funny because he's such a doofus. And he's so lovable, but he's such a coward.
Oh my God.
And like, Kaito,
little guy.
Kaito, I don't consider a coward, only when it comes to ghosts, but I'm
this
like,
this would be Kaito's reaction to seeing a ghost.
Literally, I'm like, so this true. Whole chapter, Kaito was giving me Zeke vibes.
Yes.
So and that's all I have exactly to say why. About that. Anyway, now I'm actually done with all my non-spoiler so notes.
All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break, but don't go too far, because after the break, we're going to start talking about our spoiler notes that spoil the entire game, so tune in, and this is, you know, your first warning. There'll be another one at the top of the second half that if you haven't played the, you know, this, you know, you should leave, because it will spoil the game, so don't be spoiled. It really helps us out a lot if you leave a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. We so appreciate it, and it helps other Danganronpa fans find what we're creating. So thanks so much for doing that. And if you want to become a patron, the lowest tier is just $2 a month, and you get access to a bunch of cool bonus episodes. Marin and I have a very special one planned that is going to be posted probably before this episode comes out. So you have that to look forward to. And yeah. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We're Ultra Hope Girls Podcast pretty much everywhere. And we will be right back after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Let's dive into spoilers. Spoiler City.
I will just say I don't have a lot.
I don't either, honestly, for this one. But yeah, the one that I almost said earlier that happens at the beginning of the trial is Kibo is like, oh, it's like I always have an inner voice inside my head speaking to me. This is my Kibo impression, apparently, and hearing voices and stuff. And it's like, you kind of think he's just, we're like, oh, Kibo, you know, oh, little guy. But no, it's like literally because he's the radio for the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
I did want to talk about that. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Maddie.
Oh, very quick. I was just going to say when I first played the game and I didn't know any better, I kind of just interpreted that as like, oh, he's a robot. He has some like programming in him that's like guiding him. But yeah, it's more than that.
Yeah. I wanted to know if you guys thought, did the audience vote for Kibo to join the council? Do you think that the council approached him
and oh my God.
They had a big like tune in to see what the audience voted for, like
like vote now by texting like yes or no to Danganronpa 360 or I don't know
what like it's American Idol. Yeah.
Right. I know.
That's my American Idol impression.
That was pretty good. I liked it.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. Yeah.
Interesting. I wonder how many of his choices were up for a vote. Like how many of his choices were actually his own versus like was it just like here and there was a big vote, or was it like voting all the way for like everything he's doing? You know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
The other question I had relating to Kibo is, do you think that Monodem was also controlled by the audience? And I ask that because Monodem is a robot, and not that all robots are the same. No robophobia here, but I think it would be interesting, an interesting explanation as to why Monodem goes so against the actions of the other bears if someone else were controlling him.
What if you get like a, what if viewers get to like bid on like a mono cub they can control and they just get to like create chaos?
And so like, true.
They like auction it off to the highest bidder and then you get a little remote control.
Yes. I want to also mention Monodom and like his rebellion. Like, what is like, I keep like thinking about the greater scheme of the story, and it could just be I don't remember, but like, what is like,
I still don't know the
deal. I just think the Monocubs are just so, I just don't have any, yeah, I have no idea. Anyway, I was just curious if y'all had thoughts.
My best thought, and it's not good, is that, I mean, he gets so frustrated by the potential of like losing his friendships that he has with the other Monocubs, and it feels like almost this like, oh, like I've lost the friendship for sure, and so like something made me give up on finding friendship with the Monocubs. But it's like, it's almost anticlimactic. Like, it's like they're killing off Correggio. I mean, the best explanation I can give is like Correggio had this very twisted view of what friendship is and how to earn it for someone, and Monodom debatably had something similar where he like was very controlling and whatnot. But like, it felt rushed and it felt weird, and it almost felt like Monodom didn't want Correggio to die.
Yeah. Maybe.
I think it also kind of detracts from the drama of the Blackens murder, the Blackens execution in each of these trials. It's like, why throw that in there? I don't know. I really don't know what the purpose of the Monocubs is still, even after like replaying this game, after knowing how it ends. Like, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Maybe it's really just for the merchandise, you know?
True. That's so true. Yeah. Merchandising.
Touching on back what Maddie said at the beginning about the Love Hotel and like, why is it there? One theory that I've seen about the end of the game is that it's all in Samugi's head. Actually, I'll be completely honest with you guys. Snapchat has the AI that you can talk to, and the only thing that I have talked to the AI about is Danganronpa, because I was curious to see what it knew. And it was the one that told me about the fan theory of Samugi having it be all in her head. Oh, that I have screenshots.
That is so interesting you learned that theory from an AI.
Yeah, right? Oh, it was a little spooky, but like, I made it. I'll send you guys these pictures, but I was trying to have it tell me about Danganronpa, and then I would be like, make it simpler. In 5 words, in 3 words, in 3 letters.
Oh my god, you're like, the people in the memes who are bullying the AI, where they're like, that's not 98 words! Like,
oh my god.
Let's see.
Or like just gaslighting ChatGPT.
Okay, this says, oh wait, no, that's not the right one. Oh, here we go. Okay. So I said the question that I had asked it was, why did Samugi put herself in the killing game? And it said, Samugi Shiragane's motivations for participating in the killing game are complex and multifaceted. Without giving away too much, it was really aggressive about not spoiling things, which I was like, okay, word. It can be said that Samugi was driven by a desire to participate in the ultimate killing game, which she saw as the ultimate test of her skills as a fan of the series. Samugi is a character who's invested in the world and willing to go to great lengths to participate in the game, even if it means risking her own life. And so it's just an interesting thought that she made it just because she's a fan. Like, she brought all these people together just because she wanted to like see what it was like. But anyways, kind of going back to the original point, the Love Hotel, going along that theory, it could just be that the Love Hotel is a visual demonstration of like daydreams or like, you know, like sexual thoughts that she had about the people she was with, and we're just seeing those.
Yeah. And that wouldn't surprise me, because I do think she is sort of like, yes, she's the creator of this game, but she's also like the ultimate fan. You know what I mean? Yeah. In a lot of ways. And like, a lot of her personality, even so far that we've seen, is like hinting toward like almost simpage, like she easily simps. Literally, like, there's a moment in this episode where like, she calls Gonta a hero and says like, oh, you're going to need like a mask and a tuxedo, which is a reference to Tuxedo Mask and Sailor Moon, who is like the main love interest essentially in that entire series. And so it's just like interesting and total. I think that, I mean, that totally makes sense. I don't think it's all in her head personally, but I think that like maybe that's a storytelling device for Sumugi's brain. You know what I mean? Or like something like that. True. Like, yeah, I do love that. That's neat.
I don't think it's all in her head because of how it ends, I think. Because I don't know if that would be like her fantasy of like essentially losing. You know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe. But because like in the same way that Junko and Oshima like craved despair and kind of like almost liked it when she lost because that was more despair, like maybe Sumugi is like, thinks like, oh, if I lose, it would be so interesting, like everyone, the views would go out through the roof, like everyone would be so captivated by like the idea of, you know, the me being the bad guy and losing, you know. I don't know. True. But it's a really interesting theory. Yeah, I like it.
Do you ever find yourself like when you're driving or like acting out like conversations that could happen or different ways that conversations like could have gone
all the time,
even though it didn't happen? And sometimes my brain is like, oh, I'm gonna like pick a fight with this person who's not here and wouldn't say these things, like just to see how it would go in my head. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. I think that it could be a darker timeline because like if Smoogie did that. Caroline, do you not do that at all?
Oh my god, Marin, I have clinical anxiety. Of course I do that. Constantly. Every day, every second of the day. It's terrible. Yeah, no, I have a terrible problem with that, actually.
Same. Anywho. Yeah, I was just feel like Smoogie could do that.
Yeah. No, that's true. I agree
We have a lot of lines that are, again, pointing to the fact that this is not real. I can list them if we'd like, or, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, you feel free.
All right. Monokuma says, show me the hidden cameras. Monodem says, good job, you memorized my script. I believe Monokuma says, this is not a movie, but then describes this as a world full of jests. And that's all the ones that I've got.
Yeah, it's, I mean, in every chapter, it's so like, yeah, you know, like obvious in hindsight. I'm like, that's not a roast, not a roast at all, because I think it in most people would just go, you know, because the Danganronpa creators have already made known that they're quite meta in the way that they do things. So, yeah.
I had the note that like, if, like, do you think there would be any chance that, like, if they actually did, like, someone actually did successfully complete the Necronomicon ritual, they would bring the person back to life by just, like, recasting them? You know how, like, every
Could
now and then,
you
if there's,
imagine?
Like, the actor gets replaced, like, it's the same character, but, like, a different actor, and they just get replaced.
Oh, my God. You guys need to watch WandaVision.
Wow, that would be interesting.
Like, what would be the reactions of people if there would be like, you're not the real Rentaro,
but then they like act like, and yeah, do everything just like Rentaro, so it's like almost like gaslighting in a way. It's like, do I remember Rentaro? Like,
right, exactly.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So true. Oh my god, my
attention
span
is out.
One
more note.
Okay, yeah.
And then I'm out.
I do as well.
Word, I'm done. I only had two spoiler notes for this one, unfortunately.
Okay, if yours is... Yeah, Mary, do you want to go
next? Yeah, when we go to the room where the murder happens, there's a katakana, or
where it happened.
I think that's how you pronounce it. But it's one of the types of Japanese, the alphabet. The katakana alphabet on the wall. There's some writing on there. And it says, yusukute, which I really tried. Did my main thing. And I switched up the order. Japanese can be written from like north to south, not always left to right. But it says probably one of three things. If you switch it to a different alphabet, the hiragana alphabet, which is like pronunciation based, it says the word rinse, which I couldn't think of anything for that, why it would say that. The other two I think are a little bit more likely. One of them is evening school, which I think would be interesting, just like killing school game wise.
Yeah.
But the other one was evening scoop, And it was right after the murder, and thinking on this as if it's a TV show, like just having like Evening Scoop written on the wall and like blood basically, or like it might not have been blood, but like grime, was just like, I don't know if that's what it said. That's pretty cool. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, totally.
My final note. So you guys know how there's like a big blood stain, quote unquote, it looks like a blood stain in the creepy hallway.
Yeah.
That's a new area to explore. It is very telling to me that when Sumugi is asked whether or not she's bothered by that, she says, it's not that I'm okay with it. It's just that when it's so overdone like this, it makes it seem fake. So I feel okay.
Interesting. It is like, I will say, we didn't really talk about the fourth floor, but whoo, spooks. It's weird up there. I mean, if the music didn't bop so hard, I would not want to go up there.
yeah. It's just, I think that's like so telling, because Sumugi is okay with running this show and running this killing game because it's so overdone that it seems fake. But if it wasn't that way, then she might not feel comfortable with it, which suggests that she, I don't know, might have some limitations to how much she's really willing to like put these people through. But as long as she overdoes it and dramatizes it, and you know, maybe that explains some of why it's so ridiculous with like the seesaw stuff and the all of this like stuff that's like really out there and seems so unrealistic, like maybe that explains some of it, because that's the only way that she is okay with killing people.
A lot with like, there are scarier things that happen in these games that aren't this chapter, weirdly enough. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not this chapter, despite the atmosphere being so spook, it's really the only thing that's quite scary besides like death and murder, you know.
I don't know, that tunnel under the sewer is pretty scary.
I know,
because of how futile it is.
The rock that says horse girl, that's pretty scary.
That's pretty scary too. Horrifying. Horse girl.
Horse.
It's me. It's a reference to me. We need to do Bedwood Behead.
Bedwood Behead. Yeah.
Well, this one's easy because there's three options.
Oh yeah, and I can already tell you what I'm gonna do. That's easy peasy.
It's easy for me too.
Actually. Yeah. All right. I'm going to behead Kyo. That's the only right choice. I am going to wed Tanko, queen legend icon, and I'm going to bed Angie. I feel like that's all pretty self-explanatory. Watch me say that and then everyone disagree, but yeah, that's the vibes I got. Maddie has disagreed. I can see it in her eyes.
I hate my answer, but oh god.
No. Don't do it, Maddie. He'll kill you.
I would behead Angie. I would bed Kyo, and I'd wed Tenko. And I would probably die. But if I didn't.
Hey, here we go. I'm about to like seriously expose myself right now. I would behead Angie. I would bed Tenko. And I would correct you. Because what is wedding?
Too brute.
My jaw just dropped to the floor.
I just, Caroline, let's be logical. I would bed Correggio and wed Tenko. Oh, come on, Caroline, let's not be crazy. Okay, yeah.
Did we play the same chapter?
Well, I just ignore the incest. You know what?
That's not fair of me to judge. You know, that's not fair of me. I will step back. Yeah. I've made some questionable bedwed choices in the past.
No. Logically, I should wed Tenko. So I will wed Tenko. That would be better for my mental health probably as well.
last.
This has been Danganronpa the musical.
So true.
All right, listeners, that is all we have for this episode for you today. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, we enormously appreciate your support. You know, we'll just give the little pitch again, as we always do. If you're interested in supporting us and you want more content, you can follow us on Patreon. The lowest tier is just $2 a month, and you get access to all of our bonus episodes. And there are more perks as you go up the tiers. But if you want another easy, super simple way to support us, you can go to Apple Podcasts and just give us a 5-star rating. It takes no time at all, and it really, really helps us out. So thank you so much. We will see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves, listeners. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.